Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
We are another Sunday closer to the beginning of Packers season, only 90 days away from the season opener as we start our week on this fantastic Monday. How you doing, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. My name is Alex Strofe. Joining you today, and with me today, is the great Perry Goldstein. You can find her on Twitter, at Perry_Goldstein. Hi, Perry. Only 90 days away. That feels pretty good.
Yeah, that's crazy. That feels both very close and very far away at the same time.
Right, no doubt about it. But, you know, we've got the whole summer. We can get through the nice weather, at least here in Wisconsin, and then we can get to football season now. Obviously, a lot of things are going to be changing between then and now as the Aaron Rodgers saga rolls on into month number three, almost just about. So here we go. But lots to get into. We threw up on Twitter over the weekend. We want to talk about what you want to hear about. So we opened up our show prep to you, all of our wonderful listeners. So we'll go over a couple of the things that you guys sent in to both Perry and myself. But first and foremost, I think this is the number one thing that a lot of people were talking about. We heard Andy chime in on yesterday's edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. But it's Mark Murphy continuing to, I don't know, Perry, is stir the pot the correct term for a guy that said just a couple of weeks ago, you know, it's best about if all this Aaron Rodgers conversations are had in private. But now he goes on and says, oh, yeah, Ted Thompson, the late, great Ted Thompson, used to call Aaron Rodgers a complicated fella. So now we're stirring the pot, not so much keeping everything in private. I'm just a little bit confused with Mark Murphy right now, Perry.
Yeah, I didn't actually listen to it because I saw all the uproar from Twitter and was just like, I don't need to bother with that because the quote is obviously interesting. I don't know if it was just a, you know how when you're public speaking sometimes and like you're on the spot and you just kind of say something and then afterwards you're like, shoot, I should not. I'm like wondering if that's what happened. I think this goes along, Alex. My only thought really is like, I just think this goes along with this idea that like the front office just like are not the best communicators and may not have the best people skills to deal with this situation. Do I think that that comment is going to make or break the situation at the current moment? No. Do I think it's going to make it worse than it already is? No. I think we're already at a bad enough place. So I don't know. I think sometimes the best thing to do is not say anything. And Mark Murphy didn't do that.
And he hasn't been doing that this month, it seems, right back on June 5th when we did a new Murphy Takes Five, the monthly column he writes on Packers.com. He said Aaron Rodgers was dividing the fan base. He was the reason that fans were in this Twitter uproar, as you kind of alluded to, right?
Well, he said the situation, and he's not wrong, but also he has to understand that people are going to take what he said completely out of context. Like, you have to foresee those kinds of things if you're going to be the president/owner of an organization. So again, I just think like really poor communicators.
100%. And I think, you know, to your point, right, when you're in a position like Mark Murphy's in, especially when with everything going on with Aaron Rodgers, everything he says is going to be criticized heavily. It's going to be looked at, you know, through a magnifying glass. It's going to be magnified. And that's certainly what this complicated fella point is doing as well. So as this situation continues to roll on, it just doesn't seem like Mark Murphy's de-escalating it, is more the way I'm viewing it.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, is that he's not doing anything that's like helping the situation, whereas I think Gute and Matt LaFleur are at least publicly saying everything that they need to say in order to sort of appease Rogers. Like, Mark is not on the same wavelength. No. You would think that there are like PR people and communications people within the organization to proofread and, you know, edit and give advice on these things. But I guess maybe I'm wrong, or he's not listening to them.
Yeah, one of the two, I'd assume, right? But here we are anyway. So I got to ask you, Perry, because I'm feeling less and less confident as the days and weeks continue to roll on without hearing from Aaron Rodgers, without getting a resolution. I'm getting eager. I'm getting antsy. Where's your head at with this whole Rodgers saga as we enter yet another week?
I'm not antsy. We'll see what happens come, you know, mandatory training camp. We'll see what happens in August. I feel like we have time, and I understand why fans would be, but I try not to, you know, stress too much about things that I feel like we have answers for. And it's clear right now that Rodgers is not going to be reporting anytime soon.
That's true. And the Goldstein optimism is certainly helpful here to start another week. But
I'm not saying I'm optimistic. I'm just saying that I have no expectations until August, which is when we will know if and when he shows up. But right. I definitely am starting to wane a little bit, because I at first was like, there's no way he's not coming back. But at this point, I think every option is on the table.
I think so, too. And that's why I'm in my antsy state. I want a solution, but we're certainly not going to get one for, like you said, at least 2 months at a minimum. But I expect even longer than that. So let's jump into some of these other questions. And while we're diving into Aaron Rodgers, I do want to talk a little Jordan Love. Obviously, mandatory OTAs have now come and gone last week. He started off kind of rough. Then he rebounded with a really solid day two. He got his first taste of the media this year, did Jordan Love, with a press conference last Wednesday. So I guess we talked a little bit about Jordan Love last week, Perry, when you and I got together and did this. But how are you feeling with the possibility of Jordan Love, you know, if he is indeed the starter come week one, 90 days from today, are you feeling any better than you did a week ago with him in that position? Or is it still pretty, you know, up in the air, given that we don't know a ton of about him yet? We haven't seen him in live action yet. Obviously, these were non-padded practices, so you can't take too much away from it. We're talking about practice, you know? So
yeah, I don't put too much stock into it. Because, like, when he's bad, you know, you say, okay, no, it's just camp, you know, it's his first day, whatever. So you have to apply that same logic to when he looks good. Again, like, I'm going up to training camp. I'm going to be at the first preseason game, and I think that's when I'll really feel like, when I see him in any kind of live game reps, whether I feel like confident in his ability or not. And again, even if I don't, you have to give a new player the benefit of the doubt. I always remind myself, like, Aaron Rodgers went 6-10 in his first season as a starter, so there's some learning curve, there's some leeway there, and it doesn't mean that Jordan Love is a bust. It doesn't mean that he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. It just means that he's been thrust into this position about a year or two earlier than they thought, and he just may not be ready yet, and that's okay.
Right, and obviously the goal with Jordan Love was not to have him as the starter in 2021, but the way some pieces are falling, that might be the situation the Packers have thrusted themselves into. So, yes. But given obviously he's made decent progression from what we've heard from within camp, and, you know, hopefully it's only up from here for Jordan Love. And he actually will get some preseason reps. So, you know, it's only up from here, right? I think, obviously, there is a basement for him. You know, if he is thrown into the situation in 2021, like maybe we didn't have the expectation for him, the Packers front office didn't have the expectation for him. Jordan Love's handling the pressure well. And I talked about how he met with media. He said, 100%, I'll be ready. I was drafted here to play quarterback. That's what I'm coming here to do. So it has been, you know, nice to see that positivity and that confidence from Jordan Love.
Yeah, I appreciated his maturity and the way he kind of held himself and handled himself in media. I also think, like, what else is he supposed to say to that?
Right.
You know, like, when given the opportunity, of course, he's going to, you know, if and when the time comes for him to start, if it's week one now this year, if it's week one next year, you know, you want him to be able to have the team rally around him. And the only way that he's going to be able to do that, if he walks out with confidence and says, I'm going to lead this team to win. I just don't put too much stock into that. Cause like, what else is he going to say? Like, no, I'm freaking out. I wasn't supposed to be in this position yet. Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, I'm glad he didn't say that, because that would be very concerning. But no, he handled it like a hashtag pros pro, a little coach speak for you. When he faced it. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, a lot following Jordan Love, a lot of eyes on Jordan Love this offseason as we lead up to training camp next month. All right, let's dive into some of these questions, Perry. A lot of good ones came at us. We appreciate everybody that sent some over. I knew this one was going to get your attention, so we better dive right into it. The self-proclaimed DB Stan. Nathan Lovell chimes in on Twitter. Predict the starting secondary, including the slot corner for week one, then predicted for week 18. Base defense, the Stokes or SJC take over. So, Perry, I'm going to kind of let you lead this one, because this is your forte right here. This is your MO. So we'll start with the secondary. Obviously, Jair, but on from there.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think you've got three solid starters, Jair, Amos, and Savage. I don't think there's any question there. In terms of base, I think Kevin King will start week one. I don't see, unless he's either injured or they feel like Stokes is so much better, which I don't think is right. Going to be the case. You know, they have Kevin King out there week one. They brought him back for a reason. I don't see why they would pay him $5 million to then not start him at least week one. If it changes by week 17, that's a different story. In terms of the slot position, it's an interesting question. I know that they've had a little Will Redmond in there for the star role. They've also had Chandon Sullivan. I think they're going to start with what you saw last season. I don't see a world, again, unless somebody really shows out in training camp where it's not Jair and Kevin, Chandon Sullivan in the slot, and then Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage as safety. By week 17, I have said this and I'm going to just stick by it because, you know, too late to change my tune now. I do see Stokes taking over on the boundary by week 17. I think that he has all the traits and all the tools to learn, grow under Jerry Gray, learn from the rest of the room, and eventually surpass Kevin King. I don't see it being that difficult to surpass Kevin King, not to mention, unfortunately, Kevin King is quite injury prone. Mm-hmm. So all he needs to do, right, is like pull a hammy one game and Stokes, right? And it happens to him quite often.
It does.
And Stokes goes in and potentially just earns the role and then they don't take him out of it. So that's my prediction for week 17. I don't know enough and haven't seen enough about Shamar Jean Charles to have any kind of stance on where I think that he would be. I think maybe he could be an option in like a dime or nickel package, just like Will Redmond. I don't have high hopes for Will Redmond. I think we've seen what he is and he's quite inconsistent. So I could see Shamar Jean Charles taking over there, but I've also read that in the kind of Brandon Staley defense, which Joe Barry, I think, is going to implement a little bit more. They actually prefer strong safeties, and that's why they've had Will Redmond in that star role. So having three safeties out there versus three corners. But, you know, again, they have a lot of tools to work with. So we'll see what happens by, you know, the middle of the season. But I definitely say at least my prediction is that Stokes takes over on the boundary.
Yeah, I love it. I'm totally with you there. You made a great point with Kevin King, right? They brought him back for a reason, even though they did draft a corner in the first round. I think Kevin King will be the starter week one, but that does lay the land. It gives the opportunity for Stokes to come out there. And you mentioned it, Kevin King has been injury prone. So odds are Stokes will see an opportunity, you know, probably early into the season. And if he is as good as we hope he can be, he can certainly take over pretty early. So I'm with you. Yeah. I think that's the one big move that will probably occur throughout. And obviously that's the expectation for Stokes. to eventually be opposite Jair. And that, if he, again, is as good as we think he can be, that's going to be a hell of a defensive backfield between Jair, Stokes, Amos, and Savage. That's going to be a fun group if Stokes can really come.
It makes me so excited. It really does. And I think the only thing I'd add, Alex, too, is that I know that it's pretty common for rookie corners to maybe start in the slot. I just don't see them doing that with Stokes, right? He didn't really play in the slot in college. He was drafted to be a boundary corner. Don't confuse him, right? Like, have him learn what he's meant to be, which is to be that boundary corner. So I think that in terms of, you know, who's going to play that star role, it's going to be moved around. I don't want them to move Jair. Like, why take someone out of what they excel at? But I think my one answer for who it won't be is I would be surprised if they started Stokes in the slot.
I'm totally with you. But, you know, obviously he has the speed, he's athletic, he has the abilities, but he, as you said, he didn't do it a lot. Keep him where he's meant to be, and that's the opportunity where he'll thrive the most. So we'll see what Stokes is capable of, but I'm still stoked on that pick, pun intended. You know, he's obviously going to come in and play a big role, hopefully early. And that, I think that's the expectation for Eric Stokes. So excited to see. We're only 90 days away. I still can't believe it. let's roll into the next one, Perry. This one's a lot of fun, so it might take us a few minutes. This coming from Matt Pickett. He says, who do you think is the most likely cut candidate at each position, if there is one? So we'll roll through. We'll throw out some names. And we'll try to show Brian Gutekunst how to do his job, because a lot of people have said he hasn't done a great job. Now's our opportunity to show him how to do a great job, right, Perry?
I guess so. We're putting on our GM hats.
Yeah, here we go. We'll do our best. No promises. This is not either of our day jobs. Here we go. We start with quarterback. Five of them on the roster right now. There's at least two easy to cut, right? I mean, I'd imagine the most they keep is Rodgers, assuming he's around Love and Bortles.
Yeah, I think the rest are kind of up in the air, although I'm really pulling for Kurt Benkert. You know, he's become a fan favorite.
He has indeed, as the Tim Boyle hole needs to be needs to be filled. And I think Kurt Benkert is playing that role all of a sudden. He's been throwing dots from what we can hear, but I think it's still an uphill battle for him come August.
I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, I think there's room on the practice squad, of course, but the Packers never keep more than four, and they have five at the moment.
Right, exactly. So I think we will see how that shakes out. A bunch of running backs on the roster right now. Perry, which direction do you want to go? I think obviously AJ Dillon, Aaron Jones are safe. Kylan Hill's a draft pick, so he's probably you know, got roster or at least practice squad potential. But outside of there, do you think, you know, Dexter Williams is a cut? Demaryius Crockett, I don't even know if I said that correctly, so that's that shows you how much I know about him. And then Patrick Taylor Jr., the other running back on the roster. All three of those guys kind of seem like they could be options come August.
I think it's going to be Dexter Williams, and I only say that because he's been on the team a couple of seasons, and I feel like they probably know what they have with him at this point. And if they're only going to keep four, I can't see them keeping more than four running backs, and I agree with you. I think Jones, Dillon, Kylan Hill, all safe. I'm pulling for Patrick Taylor. We got to actually have him on the podcast on PAX, which he said, and I think he brings a really interesting, unique skill set, and he's over 6 feet. He's huge.
Yeah.
And can be really versatile and used quite well. And he wasn't even really given that big of a shot last year because he got hurt. So I think it's just going to be Dexter only because, you know, he's been given his chances and his opportunities already.
Yeah, that's a great point. They know what they're getting with Dexter Williams. So, you know, if they want to see what some of these other guys have long term, he could be on the chopping block. Totally in agreement there. Now, this next position, wide receiver, where we'll go next, is kind of a fun one because I think there's talk about maybe Devin Funchess being a casualty come August. Reggie Bagleton likely could be another guy that wouldn't make the cut. Amari Rodgers, obviously the rookie, he'll be safe. Equanimeous St. Brown could be on the chopping block. There's a lot of names here that we could definitely discuss at length that could be, you know, casualties of a cut here in a couple months.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to avoid some of the guys who will probably end up on the practice squad or just be like special teams guys. So of the main, I'd say, let's see, five, six that are vying for spots, you know, you'd say Davante Adams, Alan Lazard, MVS, Amari Rodgers. I don't see really any question there. And then it's between EQ and Devin Funchess. And that's a really tough one because obviously Devin hasn't played in quite some time. So it depends on how he looks. It depends on how he connects with whoever it is under center. But my when I first saw this question, Alex, I immediately thought, I think it's EQ. And the reason that I say that is because I know. And the reason that I say that is just, again, like similar to Dexter Williams, I feel like he's had his opportunities. He's been on the team. He hasn't really been able to perform at any kind of, you know, exciting or meaningful level. He's also been fairly injury prone, which is always an issue. Not that Devin Funchess hasn't, right? But they're kind of redundant in each other. They're just big body guys. And so if you're going to keep one, I'm leaning towards Funchess, mostly also from like vet experience and that he has in the past proven that he can play, right? He went to the Super Bowl with Cam Newton. So I'm leaning EQ, but again, it totally depends on what happens in camp.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It is a guy that has been given the opportunities, and you mentioned he has been injury prone throughout his first couple of years in Green Bay. It's a tough pill to swallow, though. I really do like EQ. I like the athleticism he presents, but you make a great point, right? I mean, there's only so many roster spots available. So that is a guy that could be told sayonara, and he will go see an opportunity elsewhere. It's not like he'll bounce out of the league, but Green Bay certainly has quite a few guys that they're looking at, not to mention, obviously, the signing of DeAndre Tompkins. Maybe he'll get a shot. Juwan Winfrey, also a new addition. So will be interesting to see. But EQ, definitely a name that I think could be on the chopping block down the road. So, again, tough pill to swallow. I like EQ, but I think you nailed it with that one. Let's roll on to tight ends, shall we? Dominique Daphne, Josiah DeGuam, Mercedes Lewis, Isaac, I always slaughter it, Nauta, I believe, Jay Sternberger, Robert Tonyan, the current tight ends on the roster. They went heavy tight ends in 2020, Perry. What do you think the magic number is this year? Is it four? Is it even five for tight ends?
I don't know. I mean, Matt LaFleur loves his two tight end sets. Personally think that it might be it for Jace. I think like the suspension might just kind of be that nail in the coffin, right? Like he can't even play the first two games. He hasn't been able to perform. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. I mean, granted he got COVID last year and you couldn't really help that, but he doesn't seem to have any kind of like rapport at all with Rodgers. So I hate to cut a third round pick that feels like something the Packers likely probably won't do. But again, I have the GM hat on. And if it was me, I might say goodbye to Jace just because the rest of these guys have actually shown that they're capable of being meaningful pieces in the offense.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. That's another guy similar to Equanimee St. Brown who has been given the opportunities. The bar was set high for him, and rightfully so, as a third round pick. But he hasn't really been able to provide as much as maybe we'd like. We saw Dominique Daphne and obviously Bobby Tonyan take big leaps last year when many expected that to be Jace's opportunity. Jay Sternberger would be the guy to take a big leap in 2020, and obviously that wasn't the case. And you mentioned it, the news this week that comes out of Sternberger being suspended for the first two games of the 2021 season. You use the term nail in a coffin. I think, again, Perry, you're nailing this. Jay Sternberger seems like a likely guy that could be cut come the end of training camp and the preseason, given the opportunities. And you're right, the suspension does not help at all. I also don't think Isaac Nauta will make the roster. I think they'd stick with Daphne, DeGuara, Lewis, and Tonyan, similar to last year. And with DeGuara healthy, obviously that's a guy that Matt LaFleur has high expectations for. We know he has a man crush on him. He speaks very highly of him. He likes his flexibility and capabilities. So when he's healthy, he'll be a fun addition this year. You know, to the complex offense with the two tight end sets. We're excited to see what DeGuara is capable of. But agreed, Sternberger looks like the done deal. Offensive line, how do you want to do this? Because there's obviously about 100 options here.
There are.
when there's 90 guys on the roster. So, I mean, there's tons of names we could throw up, but any gut feelings that might be a really option for you?
Let's loop them all together because I feel like the Packers move guys around the line too much to really like pigeonhole them, you know. There's some obvious locks. I think if you told me like Jake Hansen or Simon Stepaniak were cut, like that wouldn't really surprise me all that much. Same with like Yash, but also Yash is the only, I guess, true tackle. Everyone else is sort of guard turn tackle. So if they wanted to keep him, but again, I think it's the same thought process for me is like when you've been on the team for a couple of seasons and you haven't been able to break into that, any kind of meaningful role to me, eventually they're going to let you go. I want to say like maybe a Lucas Patrick if, you know, Josh Myers and Royce Newman both are starters. Like, where does that leave Lucas Patrick? But I think he's such a good sort of depth backup that I don't know if they would do that. So I'm going with more of the guys that are just on the fringe. I know that's a really boring and not exciting answer, but I think that the kind of starting four-ish are pretty set, and there's so many vying for basically just one spot.
No, totally. And there's a lot of guys on the roster, like I mentioned, right? When you have 90-ish guys on the roster, a lot of them are going to be the big boys that are playing in the trenches. So certainly a lot of options. I like the Lucas Patrick pick. So let's roll on to defensive line. Again, similar to the offensive line, a lot of options here.
I actually don't think a single defensive lineman is going to get cut.
Really?
I don't think so. They need the big bodies, like you said, in the trenches. That's where you win games. And I think the Packers really worked hard to actually bring in defensive linemen that they think are going to be at least competitors. And they need that depth. I mean, my thought process, I think Andy and I have the same thought process always. And this is like, if Kenny Clark goes down, like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So I actually don't see anyone getting cut. Not Dean, not Kingsley Keke. Obviously, Slayton was just drafted. Delonte Scott, maybe Willington Prevlon, Carl Kemp. One of those potentially, but I think that they need the depth so badly that they don't cut a defensive lineman.
Yeah, something they didn't make a ton of moves on this offseason, but you mentioned obviously the new addition of T.J. Slayton. But not a ton of options to be cut here. Only seven guys on the roster right now. And then Jake Heflin, kind of the other name, maybe, but that's a rookie. So it's not a super sexy pick either way. So I agree. Not a ton of options here, and they need the depth. They saw some time the last couple of years without Kenny Clark, and we know that got ugly. So you certainly need the depth right now for the Packers up front defensively. Linebackers, let's dive into these now. We can go inside and outside. We can just go one overall. We can lump them all together. How do you want to go about this, Perry? This is obviously where things get interesting because there's some competition.
I feel similarly about outside linebackers, like your edge rushers, let's say. I actually don't think the Packers are going to cut any of them. I think, again, like a few could end up back on the practice squad, but they used Randy Ramsey last year. Jonathan Garvin was taking snaps with the ones, I heard, in camp because Preston and Zadarius weren't there. Yeah. Tiba showed flashes, so I don't see them cutting anyone. My actual cuts, like this is, I think, my biggest surprise if Jace wasn't. This is my version on defense, Oren Burks. I don't think that Oren Burks has done anything. If anything, he's shown he is not a starting caliber anything in the NFL. They tried him at inside linebacker. They tried him at outside linebacker. They tried him in safety a little bit. He just hasn't been able to accomplish or do anything on the field. And so it's potentially time to move on from Oren Burks.
Yes, certainly a guy that hasn't been able to find his niche. He was atop my list as well. I think Ty Summers is safe. I think Devondre Campbell certainly will have the opportunity, obviously, the new addition to the Packers inside. So two guys that could also be considered. But again, I think it's too early to judge Campbell. And Burke seems like more of a home run cut than Ty Summers does right now. So certainly a fun competition going on there inside. But progression from a year ago, obviously, if we were having this conversation 1 year ago, we'd be a little bit less confident than I think we are right now with this linebacker group that the Packers have put together.
I agree with that. Yeah, there's definitely some young options that could grow into a significant starting role.
Let's lump the defensive backs all together. I know this is your favorite group, and there's probably quite a few options back here, obviously, with like Ray Wilborn on the roster yet. But any surprising picks for you defensive backs wise?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think a couple of these guys will be practice squad, some of the undrafted free agents they brought in. It's got to be Josh Jackson, right? Like, if I'm GM and I'm applying all of the same logic to each position, which like maybe is not the way to go, and that's why I'm not a GM of a football team, it's got to be Josh Jackson. Like, again, been on the team. He hasn't been able to take any kind of meaningful snaps. He pretty much just plays special teams, and if you're vying for a roster spot and it's his fourth season going mm-hmm. fourth season because he was drafted with Jair and he hasn't shown that he can be any kind of, not even a starter, right? Just like he gets put in the fourth quarter when the Packers are winning by 40. That's just not what you want to see from your second round pick. And he's getting paid like a second round pick, right? And this is his last year on his deal. I doubt they extend him. So I think he's a potential candidate.
No, I agree totally. I think that's the guy that's top of the list, the obvious pick. He's been disappointing and underwhelming ever since he's been drafted. Hasn't been able to live up to that aforementioned second-round potential. It was a guy I was excited about when he was drafted back in 18, Perry, but he's really been underwhelming. So I think that's an obvious pick. Kadar Holman's another name maybe you could throw out there that's been a long while and hasn't really been able to find his niche back there for the defensive backs. So I think those are two of the names that kind of come top of mind for me. But I think, you know, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, obvious locks are Jair, Amos, Savage, King, Sullivan, Redmond, and obviously the new picks and Stokes and Gene Charles, at the very least, if they don't keep a couple more names in that. So definitely a group that's shaping up to be a lot of fun. I'm pumped about this defense now that we've gone through it. It's certainly it's certainly one that I'm excited for and could really help this team make a run. And obviously that's not saying a whole lot given the last 2 years ended in the NFC Championship game. But this defense is a group I'm feeling really good about.
Me too. And now that I agree with you, now that we're going through it, like there's a reason why the Packers brought everybody back. You know, it's like a really, really strong group and a lot of guys who can potentially make some nice jumps and be really standout kind of, I guess we're jumping ahead to one of our questions, but guys who can make a leap, who can be really impactful for the team that I think from all different positions we're both excited about.
And that's the last question I want to get to, Perry. So let's get right to it. Adam chimes in on Twitter. Who are you looking forward to making the biggest leap in ability from this year in comparison to last year? So somebody that was around a year ago that you're looking forward to making a leap.
Oh, it's Rashawn Gary. Oh, it's 100%. Yeah. It's like the easiest question to answer. I mean, first off, like first round pick a couple of years ago, I think a lot of people were really surprised at the pick because classic Packers took someone who's a little bit developmental and didn't see the field because he was behind both the Smiths who had just like otherworldly seasons in 2019. But then you see him back out there in the 2020 season and he really is impactful. You know, sometimes I think things that rushers do don't necessarily end up on the stat sheet, but he can be really disruptive. And eventually when you're continuously disruptive of the pocket and the quarterback, you are going to end up on the stat sheet, right? You are going to end up getting home or allowing somebody else to get home, or you're going to get that half sack with somebody else, a tackle for a loss, et cetera. And I just think Rashawn is right there. You know, he has every physical tool possible and you can like feel him being molded by Mike Smith and getting the opportunities just all he needs is more snaps, I think, and you will see it. And I think there's some buzz about him around the league too. I saw this week on Twitter, he was in like a PFF list of potential breakout candidates. And it's obviously because he's just got everything going for him right now. All he needs is the opportunity. And I also, I'll just add, he's just got the best mindset. And I think there's something to that for players, you know, especially if you haven't necessarily performed to your first round pick status quite yet, and you're going into year three. Like, he's very confident. He's very focused. He's very just like, if you ever, you listen to his pressers, what everybody says about him is like, he puts 120% into everything that he does. And when you're like that in anything that you do, you're going to end up being successful. So I'm super, super hype about Rashawn Gary, and I can't wait for him to just like shut down all the people who said that he was a bust, because I really have high hopes.
Yeah, me too. It's a guy that we're looking forward to making a big leap. And you mentioned it, the opportunities are going to be there more so than ever for Rashawn Gary. So it's going to be really fun to see what he can do with them. But you mentioned it, it's a guy that goes at 100 miles per hour all the time. It's only a matter of time before he makes that big jump. And I think this is the year. We talked about it a little bit last week when we were together, Perry. You know, Preston might not get all the opportunities that he got the last 2 years, because a guy by the name of Rashawn Gary is going to take those opportunities and hopefully make the most of them. I'm really excited to see what Rashawn is capable of in 2021. I'll go offense for my picks, though, plural, and I'll explain why. How about the first and second round picks from 2020? Jordan Love, if the opportunities are there, I'm excited to see him actually active and on the field. So that's already a jump from the 2020 season. But in all seriousness, A.J. Dillon's going to get that Jamal Williams role, that number two guy in the 1-2 punch for the Packers backfield. And if there is no Aaron Rodgers, I imagine they'll be relying heavier than they usually do on the backfield. So I'm really excited to see what Quadzilla's capable of in 2021. This is a guy that's going to take the league by storm, I think. I mean, this is if not the best, one of the best 1-2 punch backfields in the entire National Football League.
It really is. And especially if what you're hearing about him, like kind of catching passes and running routes in practice, like that should strike fear into the hearts of defenses. Like, he already looks like he's impossible to tackle. And then you add in his ability to catch passes. But I completely agree with you. You know, you saw what everyone referenced the Titans game because it was the only opportunity he had where he took like any kind of meaningful snaps. But when you get that and you get him into a rhythm, I think that he's going to be he's going to bulldoze people down. And again, I think the schedulers love to give the Packers home games in December and January, which I think that they're probably fine with. And that's when you're going to really like break AJ Dillon out and see it. You mentioned Jordan Love, and we did get a question about Jordan Love. If you want to go over it like really, really quickly before we wrap up, because I think it's interesting.
Yeah, it was from Joey Bonadon, and he asked, if Jordan Love is the starter in 2021, what is a realistic win count for this team? So remember, it is now 17 games rather than the normal 16, which is always the fun asterisk for this upcoming season. So of those 17 games, and it's a tough schedule, mind you, how many do you think the Packers can win with Jordan Love? I'll go first, Perry, if you don't mind. Realistic for Jordan Love in year one is like 10-7 absolute ceiling. This group around him is really solid. I think the Packers have set him up well. But when you're a year two guy that has very little opportunities under his belt in the last ever since you've been drafted, you're not in the best position to win. So I think 10-7 is like the absolute ceiling. But I think realistically, it's an 8-9, 9-8 year with Jordan Love under center. I think he's capable of you know, putting together above 500 season, given the group he has around him. So I will go with a confident 9-8 if Jordan Love is the starter.
That's a good one. That was around what I was thinking as well. Just given, you know, Matt LaFleur's scheme is super quarterback friendly. We just mentioned the 1-2 punch in AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones. They're going to lean on that a lot. I think about, Alex, when I saw this question, I went back to the Brett Hundley season. And I think the Packers went 6-9-1 that season, if I'm not mistaken. And I think about how Devontae Adams was still performing at such an elite level, even with Brett Hundley under center. And you'd like to think that Jordan Love is at least better. Like, his floor, right, to me, is Brett Hundley. So if you're going to get your running backs going and you're going to get Davante Adams, who can still perform with pretty much anybody, I agree with you. I think around 500 is kind of that sweet spot where that would be nice if that's where they ended up. Now, could it still be 7-10? Would I be surprised about 7-10? Not at all.
No.
And I also agree with you that 10-7 wouldn't shock me either, just giving the pieces. But that would mean that the defense would have to be performing at a pretty elite level. Like, the Packers would have to have probably a top 10 defense for that to be the case, which is not out of the realm of possibilities, but again, is a pretty decent question mark. So I think the range to me is like 7-10 and 10-7.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And to go with the defense, right? It's a group, as I mentioned 5 minutes ago, very excited about, but you can't slot them home as a top five, top 10 D right now. So the schedule is tough. Road games at Arizona, Kansas City, and Baltimore. Home games against teams like Seattle, Cleveland, the Rams with Matthew Stafford. So certainly a fun schedule for a second-year quarterback with no reps under his belt prior to his second season. But the expectations are high with the group around him. So I think we're in a good ballpark between 7-10 wins.
I agree with you. I'd be happy with that. I would accept that.
Oh, I love talking hypotheticals, but only 90 days away from real, actual football. I cannot freaking wait. And I think Perry Goldstein, after her performance today on the Pack a Day podcast, is going to be working for a front office somewhere. So, yeah, that's high praise, isn't it?
Dreams come true.
Good stuff. Perry, at Perry_Goldstein on Twitter. Great chatting with you, as always. That was another fun conversation today.
Always, Alex. We don't even need Andy anymore.
No, I think we've graduated past the Andy Herman. We don't need him as a crutch anymore, I don't think. Yes, we do. We miss you, Andy. We're looking forward to getting back with you. But Andy filled in yesterday. We gave him the day off. So for Perry Goldstein, again, at Perry_Goldstein on Twitter, I'm Alex Strope. You can connect with me at Alex_Strope. Looking forward to chatting with you again real soon. In the meantime, go Pack Go and take care of yourself. Peace.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.